Hey everyone, welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Well, off the top, I want to thank Brother Bobby Lamar. He put together a flyer for the show and is having them out for the taking at his winter reunion. Again, spreading the cement and sharing the light of Freemasonry. I received my Master Craftsman book and other materials, and I have to say that the book is more palatable than I had anticipated. It's written in a fresh way that is comprehensible to the Masonic scholar and beginner the same. I recommend it highly. I was also made aware of a York Rite course, which is similar in character, which I plan to take as well, just as soon as I finish Master Craftsman 1 and 2. We had some good conversation on the Facebook page regarding Martin Luther King Jr. being made a Mason at sight by the Georgia Prince Hall Grand Master in 1999. Issues some brothers were having is not that they made Dr. King a brother at sight, it's that they did it posthumously, or after he had passed. I think most would agree that Dr. King would have been a good brother in his lifetime, which is why it was done, or it wasn't done. A little unclear. However, as I stated, there is much discussion on that subject. I believe our friend and brother Todd E. Creason even had a post on this. I also wanted to mention I received a very touching email from a brother down under. That's right, Australia. And I wanted to say thanks again, brother, and a special hello to all the brothers in Australia. This week's first piece, The Blessings of Liberty, by George W. Baldwin, past Grand Master, Grand Lodge of British Columbia. This short talk bulletin has been adapted from a speech given at the Grand Lodge of Alaska in February 1987 by Most Worshipful Brother George W. Baldwin, past Grand Master, Grand Lodge of British Columbia. We thank Most Worshipful Brother Baldwin for sharing these cross-the-border thoughts with us. This year, 1987, marks the 200th anniversary of the drafting and ratification of the United States Constitution by those 13 former colonies which 11 years earlier had joined in their Declaration of Independence from Great Britain. Incidentally, there were those other American colonies in existence at that time which chose to remain loyal, and of course, they laid the foundation from which Canada, the largest geographically speaking democratic nation in the world, developed. I want to draw your attention to those events of 1787, and in particular, to some of the language used. The preamble to the Constitution is a masterpiece of concise writing and is generally believed to have been the work of Governor Morris, a delegate from Pennsylvania to the Constitutional Convention. Even though you may be well acquainted with it, let me read it to you again. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States. I would ask you to pay particular attention to the phrase, to secure the blessing of liberty. I do not want to dwell at length on what those blessings are or attempt to find a definition for them, for I think that each one of us, if so asked, would produce a different list. Perhaps Thomas Jefferson came as close as any to a satisfactory definition when he wrote, "In the Declaration of July 4, 1776, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." But how are those rights to be secured? The Constitution, as originally drafted, did not spell out any particular rights, nor any rules for securing them. The first 10 amendments, known ever after as the Bill of Rights, were not proposed until 1789, nor adopted until 1791. I mention this because it is of importance to us as Freemasons that likewise there is not mention made of any duties or responsibilities insofar as the individual citizen is concerned, either in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, or, for that matter, in the Canadian Constitution and its Charter of Rights and Freedoms. My proposition tonight is that those rights, that our freedoms, that the blessings of liberty can only be secured when the individual citizen recognizes and acts upon his or her own sense of duty and responsibility. I also venture to suggest that this is in direct accord with the principles of Freemasonry, To illustrate this, let me share with you part of the Canadian Masonic ritual, where we are told that the chief point in Freemasonry is to, quote, endeavor to be happy ourselves and to communicate that happiness to others, end quote. In this sentence, the word happiness must be taken in the wider meaning of the 18th century and coincides with the meaning used by Jefferson. We are also taught in our Canadian ritual that the ritual is intended to carry into an active practice the four cardinal virtues, temperance, fortitude, prudence, and justice, combined with the theological virtues, faith, hope, and charity, thereby demonstrating to the world at large that in Freemasonry there is found the true import of these three great social treasures, fraternity, liberty, and equality. Let us turn for a moment to consider the men who sat in their hot, stuffy meeting room in Philadelphia throughout that summer of 1787. The presiding officer of the convention was Brother George Washington. I am sure that when he considered securing the blessings of liberty, he had no illusions as to the responsibilities. He had amply demonstrated over the preceding 10 or 11 years that he was prepared to contribute his all to the cause of liberty as he saw it. Yet, he was a reasonably prosperous landowner in Virginia. He was well connected with the aristocracy and governing class in that commonwealth, and he could quite easily and justifiably have remained at home in Mount Vernon that summer and let someone else do the work for a change. But such was not his nature. As a patriot and a Freemason, he saw where his duty lay, and he took up the responsibility of seeing that the blessings of liberty were secured to his fellow countrymen, not only in Virginia, but throughout the new nation that was then being created. It is interesting to note that for a time Washington seriously considered not attending the convention in Philadelphia that summer long ago, for very valid political reasons, but he was ultimately persuaded to attend by James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, Edmund Randolph, and by his especial friend, General Henry Knox. Another Freemason who could easily have been excused from attendance at the convention on the account of age and health was Brother Benjamin Franklin of Pennsylvania. He was then over 70 years old, within 3 years of his own death, and had certainly proved his loyalty to the cause of liberty over and over again. He suffered from gout and stone, and had to come to the State House, where the convention met, in a sedan chair, which he had bought in Paris, as it was the only mode of transportation that did not jostle him painfully. Yet he came, because he knew it was his duty to do so. And we should all remember that it was Franklin, early on in the convention, when it seemed that the rival factions from the different colonies would never reach any basis for agreement, moved that every morning the session be opened by prayer to the Most High for his guidance. Franklin's duty lay not only to his fellow citizens, but to his Maker. And he saw that prayer to God was the first step to be taken in securing the blessings of liberty. These are just two examples. I am sure there are many more, but I used these to point out that the absence of any mention of duty in the Constitution was not an oversight. It just did not occur to men such as Washington and Franklin, as well as others there present, that the rest of us needed to have it spelled out for us. When the Constitution had been drafted, it was sent to the Constitutional Congress, accompanied by a letter written in the hand of Morris but signed by Washington. In it, Morris wrote, "Individuals entering into society must give up a share of liberty to preserve the rest. The magnitude of the sacrifice must depend as well on a situation and circumstance as on the object to be obtained. It is at all times difficult to draw with precision the line between those rights which must be surrendered and those which may be reserved." So let us now ask where we stand in 1987, and what we, each one of us, is doing to secure the blessings of liberty. Which of our rights are we prepared to surrender in order to preserve our freedom? Or, in other words, what duty will we assume and discharge in order to secure the blessings of liberty? Let us not forget the duties which we assumed when we entered the bonds of Freemasonry, the duties which we owe to God, to our countries, and to ourselves. We discharge those duties and so secure the blessings of liberty when we set about to practice those cardinal and theological virtues which I mentioned earlier. We secure those blessings not only to ourselves, but for our whole nation, yours and mine, by the manner in which we act as citizens, as individuals, as children of a common father, and as brethren of one another. I would like to leave you with a little poem that was recently printed in Ann Landers' column in our local newspaper in Prince George. It was attributed to an 88-year-old resident of the Masonic homes at Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, and is entitled Definition of a real man. One who has self-confidence but does not show it. One who can be courteous in the face of discourtesy. One who keeps his word, his temper, and his friends. One who wins respect by being respectable and respectful. One who has a steady eye, a steady nerve, a steady tongue, and steady habits. One who is silent when he has nothing to say. One who is calm when he judges and humble when he misjudges. May I suggest to each of you that if we take the poem to heart, that if we accept and discharge our duties and responsibilities in this world, that if we live by the principles of our Masonic order, then we may join in spirit with Washington, Franklin, Morris, and those others who labored throughout that hot Philadelphia summer 200 years ago to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and for our posterity. The next piece I have is called The Pirate Mason, from Freemasons Monthly Magazine, 1842. The always talented and sometimes eccentric Harriet Martineau, in her retrospect of Western travels, relates the following anecdote. Then came Captain L, with his 5 fine daughters. He looked too old to be of their father, and well he might. When master of a vessel, he was set ashore by pirates with his crew on a desert island, where he was 36 days without food. Almost all his crew were dead, and he just dying, when help arrived by means of Freemasonry. Among the pirates was a Scotchman, a Mason, as was Captain L. The two exchanged signs. The Scotchman could not give aid at the moment, but after many days of fruitless and anxious attempts, he contrived to sail back at the risk of his life, and landed on the desert island on the 36th day from his leaving it. He had no expectation of finding the party alive, but to take the chance and lose no time, he jumped ashore with a kettle full of wine in his hand. He poured wine down the throats of the few whom he found still breathing, and treated them so judiciously that they recovered. At least it was called recovery, but Captain L's looks are very haggard and nervous still. He took the Scotchman home and cherished him to the day of his death. It will probably be recollected by a portion of our readers that while in this country we believe in the year 1856 Miss Martineau perhaps laboring under one of those fits of eccentricity which frequently led her into the acts of indiscretion sided with the enemies of our institution and contributed of her talents and influence to bring it into dispute and public contempt. It operated in her case, however, as did McFingal's gun, which, being charged for duck or plover, shot wide and kicked its owner over. Of the result of the exploit, we do not complain. That which excites our surprise is that she should have so far forgotten what is due to the character of an ingenious and honorable opponent, a character that we had a right to expect to find in a lady of her intelligence, as to give publicity to an incident, the truth of which she does not doubt, so beautifully exhibiting the practical utility of the order under its holier attributes, without the slightest reference to her previously expressed opinions. It afforded her an honorable opportunity to have acknowledged her error, and to have done tardy justice to an institution which, while writing the anecdote, she must have felt conscious she had wrongfully traduced. But her self-pride was permitted to triumph even to the prejudice of her character for integrity and truth. Comment, however, was not necessary. The mere recital of the incident furnished a full refutation of all she had previously written against the institution. She has given to her readers the evidence that the heart of the renegade, dead to all other associations but that of crime, can be reached and awakened to a sense of the kindlier feelings of humanity by the irresistible appeals of Freemasonry. The pirate Mason, at the risk of his own life, saves that of his brother. What a sweet spirit is here shown. The pirates no more, but warmed by the benevolent affections he pants to succor and to save, even in such hands the wine is blessed by him whose ways are indeed mysterious. Masonry superadds to our other obligations the strongest ties of connection between it and the cultivation of virtue and furnishes the most powerful incentives to goodness. DeWitt Clinton. Now I have to admit that that last piece is interesting to read because it is in fact hard to read, and I suspect harder yet to understand as I read it, and for that I apologize. And now I have to take a moment and tell you all about how to listen to the show, on the go, or any other way you want to do it. So you might be wondering, hey, does this show have an application? Well, is it on Apple? Is it on Android? The answer is yes, we have both. What is the benefit? Well, with the purchase of those apps, it gives you access to the papers we read and some other bonus goodies like Masonic wallpapers for your mobile device, sometimes extra videos as well. And then I mentioned the show is streaming, no more syncing. For every app purchase, it offsets the hosting cost for the audio files. Now, if you're wanting access streaming and also have other podcasting interests, Stitcher Smart Radio is an option as well, featuring our show streaming, but also when you register for free and you use the promo code WhenceKMU with no spaces, you get three things. First, access to our show streaming. Second, you get entered into a drawing for $100 from Stitcher Smart Radio. And three, my thanks, because when you use the code WhenceKMU with no spaces, Stitcher contributes $1 to the show, which also offsets the cost. You can also listen via the Roku Media Player on your TV if you grab the Blueberry channel, which is also free. It's a neat option. Again, the goal here is to make the show available on every medium so no one has to sign up for anything new, keeping it comfortable. So check those things out. This week's famous Freemason is Richard Tyson. Now some of you might say, who is that? Well, you might remember him as Arnold Schwarzenegger's nemesis in Kindergarten Cop. That's right, Dominic's crazy dad. He's an avid Shriner, and you may have seen his commercial for the Shrine in which he says, "Hello, I'm Richard Tyson, and I'm an actor, and I usually play a bad guy, but in real life, I play a good guy, because I'm a Shriner." And I posted that on our Facebook page as well. His Wikipedia page reads, "His most prominent role was the villain as Cullen Crisp, Sr. in Kindergarten Cop, co-starring alongside Arnold Schwarzenegger. He also starred as high school bully Buddy Revel in 1987 comedy 3 O'Clock High. Richard can also be seen in the Farley Brothers movie Kingpin, Me, Myself, and Irene, and There's Something About Mary. The latter features Tyson as a detective Cravoy, who questions, then attacks Ben Stiller in a classic scene from the film. Tyson was the co-star of the television series Hardball alongside John Ashton in the 1980s. Richard's recent films include The Fear Chamber, Richard III, Flight of the Living Dead, a film about a government-created virus that turns the dead into zombies being transported on a plane, in which he plays a sky marshal. No Bad Day, starring Michael Madsen, and the western Shoot First and Pray You Live, also starring Jim Gaffigan and James Russo. He is also the lead in the horror film Big Bad Wolf, in which he plays a stepfather accused by his stepson of being cruel and a vicious werewolf. His most recent work is the film Jake's Corner, in which he plays ex-football star Johnny Dunn, who owns a small town called Jake's Corner. The film has been cited as Tyson's best work to date, and also stars singer BJ Thomas and actor Danny Trejo. Richard Tyson's acting credits also include guest appearances on the TV shows CSI, New York, Boomtown, Martial Law, as well as the TV films The Visitation, Moscow Heat, Liar's Poker, and Black Hawk Down. One of Tyson's favorite roles is Genghis Khan from the 1992 film, also starring Charlton Heston and Pat Morita. Due to insufficient funds, the film was never completed. Tyson was born in Mobile, Alabama. He graduated from Davidson High School in 1974. He holds a master's degree in fine arts from Cornell University. He enjoys playing golf and appears regularly on the Mr. Cigar radio show in Los Angeles. He won the Peacemaker Award in Russia in 2006. Tyson is a third-degree Master Mason and a member of the ABBA Shriners in Mobile. He currently lives near Hollywood with his wife and children. His brother John is a former district attorney of Mobile County and was a Democratic Party nominee for the Attorney General of Alabama in 2006. That's it for this week. Remember to find the show on Facebook and follow on Twitter. Check out the apps and everything else. Keep checking out the Midnight Freemasons for amazing Masonic content, which comes out 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Stay on the level, everyone. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.